welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and today we have a really special episode of the podcast for you that is about student loans. And this is a really thorny subject. I think it's one that keeps many an MBA applicant up at night. But I've got a really exciting story to tell about a new way of kind of looking into student loans. And this is, there's a company called Leverage, and I'm very pleased to welcome the founders of Leverage, Nikhil Agarwal and Chris Abkarians. And, you know, guys, thanks so much for joining. Hope all's well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
So there's a couple of things. I want to give a quick bio on each of you, just so that our listeners, you know, have a sense of your background. You are both current HBS students. Nikhil, you're going to graduate this spring, and Chris as well. But Nikhil, you went to undergrad at U Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and you majored in aerospace engineering. Then you worked for Boeing, it sounds like, for 6 years or so as a test engineer. And then you started up Leverage and Harvard at the same time for business school. Chris, you're also, as I said, a member of the class of 2020 at Harvard Business School. You did your undergraduate studies at Duke in political science and public policy. It sounds like you did a stint at LEK in consulting with a kind of focus on media and entertainment, which led you to your next job, which was at Netflix. And that took you all the way up to your time starting at HBS and starting up Leverage. So welcome to the show, guys. Really appreciate you being here. And I'm excited because I feel like, you know, for many applicants, they spend so much time getting into business school that they're hit. It's almost like being hit by a train when they realize that, okay, I've got to figure out now, like, how am I going to pay for this? What am I going to do, you know, student loans wise and all these other things that go into it. So I'm hoping that you guys can help kind of put people at ease a little bit as we talk through how this works and how your business works. So I'll start with Nikhil. I just wanted you to tell me a little bit about how you came up with the idea for Leverage and how, you know, you and Chris joined forces to start the company. Because I think it's a really interesting idea, you know, and it'd be great to give a little background on that.
Yeah, of course. It's actually a pretty fun story. Chris and I, we were both working full-time jobs, like you said, in different cities. He was in LA, I was in Seattle, when we got the admission letter and we were super excited. And then boom, came the, you know, decision of figuring out how to make the finances work. At the time, you know, we got put in this chat group full of all the admitted students, maybe 800 or so students. And in that group, we heard about a few students in Israel that were able to get lower interest rates on their loans because they went to a bank and said, hey, we'll all take a loan from you if you reduce the rates. And it worked.
Yeah.
And it was pretty surprising to me that it worked. And inspired by that, I said, hey, is anyone interested in giving this a shot in the United States? I just texted back in that group and 23 people hit the little heart icon on the message. And, you know, that was encouraging. And Chris messaged me at that moment. It was actually his birthday. So in the middle of having a good time, he said, hey, I'm interested in helping. And that's how we really started working together. It was a project to help our classmates and ourselves get lower interest rate loans. We created a Facebook group that people could join, a small Google form to collect information like, you know, how much they wanted to borrow and what their credit score was, where they were going to school. Chris, of course, the recovering consultant, created this great presentation that outlined, you know, a marvelous pitch to the banks to say, hey, like, we are great borrowers and you should really reduce interest rates for us.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I guess what I was going to just clarify for our listeners is that, you know, Leverage is not a student loan company, right? I mean, you guys aren't actually making loans. You're actually negotiating loans. And so I'm sure there's a term for this in the kind of finance world, but I love this idea of like bringing together a whole bunch of people. This is kind of the power of, you know, strength in numbers, right? So, and I would think going to a bank or a set of banks with a whole bunch of accepted HBS students, you know, that's a safe bet, kind of. You know, these are people that are really talented and likely to have great jobs, likely to be able to pay off their loans. So, yeah, what a great idea. And I don't know if there's any more background you wanted to give, or I had a question for Chris about sort of more of the marketplace in general.
Yeah, there was a little bit, maybe it's helpful to give a little bit more background on how that summer ended up, because it wasn't that easy. When we went to the branches, you know, we were walking into bank branches in LA and in Seattle, and we pretty much walked into every bank branch we could think of, and not one gave us a positive response.
Oh, no.
So what someone would think was a no-brainer didn't turn out to be, and we flipped the model on its head. We started reaching out to the C-suites of various lenders, mm-hmm. and the feedback we got from them was, hey, guys, this is interesting, but it's just not big enough. Right. At that time, we had 70 people in the group, and the banks were saying, hey, that's not big enough. So that's when we really reached out to all the other business schools. That's when it expanded out of just HBS. And we grew to 700 people in less than 10 days. And that was the momentum that allowed us to go back to the banks, finally close a deal, save about $15,000 each for the students who took our loan. And that's how the project was born.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, Chris, my question for you is, I feel like some of our listeners are just getting started. You know, we're at the time of year where acceptance letters are coming and people are starting to deal with the reality of paying for business school. So it'd be great if you could just give some basic background on like how student loans for business school typically work, how much do people borrow on average, and what does that look like when they're done with business school? Like, how much are people paying each month to pay off these loans? And, you know, on average, obviously recognizing that each person has their own, you know, financial needs and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great question. And really, before I dive into that, I just want to say paying for business school is about finding ways to minimize the total cost that the school says you owe, and then figuring out how to finance that.
Yeah.
We've been really focused over the last 2 years on figuring out how to finance that at the cheapest possible price. But I would just encourage people to think about one thing here, and that's when you get your financial aid award letter, which for need-based financial aid typically happens a few weeks after you're admitted to school. And for most schools, you should view that as a first draft and not a final draft. There's often quite a bit of room to negotiate that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of schools actually are already budgeting for that. They expect people to say, oh, I got into X school and Y school, but I really want to go to yours. Can you help me go by giving me a little bit more money? And I think, like, no matter what anybody tells you, there is quite a bit of that that does happen. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not asking or trying to, somebody else is and is getting that money.
Yes, absolutely. And we see that happening on clearadmit.com, right? Because people on DecisionWire are sharing their admissions results and scholarship, you know, amounts awarded. And then they're talking about that process of like alerting schools that they got more here than there and they want to up that. So there's definitely some of that happening, much to the schools, you know, some of the schools are not so happy about this because it's something that's more common now. But anyway, so that's interesting information and really good advice. Tell us a little bit about how the loan process works.
Sure. So so let's say you've gone down to, now you know how much you're going to actually have to pay to go to school. The loan process itself, let's kind of work backwards from the tuition due date. Every school's financial aid office will tell you this is the date by which we need you to get your tuition in, and you should be applying for student loans roughly like 30 days before that tuition due date at least. So for a lot of schools, that's some date in September or in August. And so you work back from there, and like about 30 days in, you should have already applied to the places that you want to get a student loan from. Now, that's a lot more complicated because in graduate school, you've got two options. You can get a federal student loan or a private student loan. For any of the listeners who took out a student loan for undergrad, federal student loans were kind of a no-brainer. They're always cheaper than private student loans because Congress sets the price. Congress isn't as friendly to grad students, and so the cost of a federal student loan is a lot higher for an MBA student than it was for undergrad. And that actually means there's, in many cases, private student lenders who offer much lower rates than the federal government directly. Now, the challenge that Nikhil and I faced when we were first looking at private student loans was there's a bunch of providers of private student loans out there. Your school will typically just give you a list of all the places that people have gotten a loan from in the past, but there's no easy way to compare what the interest rate you'll pay on those will be or whether there's any fees associated with those loans. And so what we're doing and working, what we have done is when we run an auction between lenders, we actually get a lot more insight and transparency into what all the terms and rates that they'll offer to our members look like. And we end up selecting the one lender who's offering the lowest overall rates with the most flexible terms and make that available to our members so that they are basically getting all the research done for free really quickly. Now, what that means in terms of the cost to the students, the average person over the last 2 years we've seen takes out $62,000 per year, graduates with about $125,000 in debt. And at the interest rates that we've been able to negotiate, that ends up being about $1,400 to $1,500 a month in payments after school, which is a pretty large sum, to be totally honest. But the average income and compensation levels from business schools in like the top 20 to 30 make that an amount that you can actually pay pretty comfortably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would think that the typical, starting salary for an MBA grad can help cover that pretty easily. But yeah, that's very helpful. I think for a lot of folks, we always hear the same refrain, which is that, oh, every applicant's different, everyone borrows a different amount. But I think people sometimes just getting these averages, like, oh, okay, most people are taking out 62K a year, which means they're gonna owe over 125 or so after, when they're done. And that, yeah, just taking that down to a concrete number of roughly what people might be paying in to kind of pay back the loans per month. That's really helpful. So I guess maybe I don't know if you I feel like some of our listeners have a handle on this, but how did this process work before you guys came along? I mean, you said that schools would send a list of like all the lenders, and so literally it was just up to the candidate to go and start talking to these individual companies and see what the offers were. Is that, I mean, is that how it worked?
Yeah, so with the exception of a handful of schools, so schools' financial aid offices have two options. They can either go through a lengthy process where they try to negotiate a specific deal with a lender, basically doing what Leverage does, but just for one campus, or they can not go through that process and just give students a list of all the options for places that people got loans from in the past. The vast majority of schools just do that. And so your financial aid office would say, here's a piece of paper with the federal student loan option and a list of other banks that people have used in the last couple of years. They'll send you to a website called Elm Select, which is something that looks like it was created in 1998 and just lists cards for every bank that somebody has taken a loan from in the past. And you have to apply individually to each and every one to find out what rate you're going to get charged.
Got it.
And you'll actually see quite big spreads in what you'll get charged at the same credit, with the same credit score from one bank to the next for what is, in our minds, essentially a commodity product. Money is the ultimate commodity. We are in the business of trying to identify a reputable lender who is willing to offer you that commodity at the cheapest price.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Nikhil, I want to go back to you, and I know that you had painted this really vivid picture of a group of HBS students in a chat room. You come up with this idea based on having seen some folks in Israel negotiate a good deal. What were some of the key milestones? Like, when did you know that this like business was actually going to happen?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of key milestones that come to mind. Probably the first one was when Chris and I actually met for the first time, right, when we were on campus after helping a few hundred students with their loans. We met for the first time and we sent out this survey to everyone who had used the deal to get some feedback. And the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. That's actually when we learned exactly how much we had saved our members, our classmates. And when we looked at those results, we told ourselves we need to figure out a way to make this possible for every generation of student after us. And that's what sort of put the ball in motion to create something more sustainable than a project over the summer. And I think what sort of cemented this in a much more permanent way is our experience over 2019 and the response we've gotten from the community over 2019. Within 1 year, we've grown to help students with over $100 million of student loans, delivered savings of over $25 million collectively across the pool of students. Lenders won't publish information that allows us to be 100% sure, but we believe we are now the number one source for full-time MBAs in the United States to get their student loans. So we're super grateful to the MBA classes of 2019, 20, and 21 who've helped us reach these milestones and cemented our belief that we can have this impact on all future generations of MBA students and potentially even bigger than that.
Yeah, those are amazing milestones. So now I want to flip the coin a little bit and ask Chris, were there any growing pains or kind of obstacles that you two encountered? I mean, there must have been some things that didn't go very well at some point.
Yeah, definitely. When we first started, the hardest thing was probably trying to get a deal with a lender. Nikhil touched on this a little bit earlier, but I want to emphasize a little bit how close we were to giving up because we didn't think that we would get any lenders to take it seriously enough to be willing to strike some sort of deal with us. And our last-ditch effort was to literally take a skill set from my consulting days, which meant trying to find somebody on LinkedIn, cold email messaging them and asking them for their advice and seeing if we can get somebody to talk to us. We did that with the CEOs of about 11 banks. One of them actually got back to us, encouraged us to keep going, put us in touch with somebody on his team to talk more about how we were building this out. And then we went from just on the verge of giving up the next day to then saying, let's actually expand this to every business school that we can get our hands on and see if we can make something work. That scrappiness has kind of been a part of the DNA of the company over the last 2 years. I'll say like a second pretty major turning point was, or just challenge in general is, we'll touch on this a little bit later too probably, the difficulty of running a business in business school is not something I appreciated. I thought that I'd have plenty of free time. I also thought I'd have a lot of time to go to the gym and eat well. It is pretty crazy how occupied you are all the time. Mm-hmm. We've been really lucky to make that balance work a lot better in our second year than we did in the first, and to be able to devote the time that it takes to actually do this well. But it is very true. I'm sure anybody else who's listening who's currently in their first year of business school or their second probably feels similarly. You have no idea where your day went by the time you get to the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, no great stories without its, kind of obstacles. It sounds like you guys, really interesting how, this goes from a group of HBS students to some feedback that that group maybe isn't big enough. And then you do this outreach to like all, leading business schools and you end up getting 700 people together, which, it sounds like that speaks that's, the kind of, again, strength in numbers stuff. So Nikhil, I want to turn to you and ask, like, what's next for Leverage? Are you going to get into like undergraduate loans or other, other verticals, than what you're already in, or is there anything exciting on the horizon?
Yeah, there's a ton on the horizon for Leverage. We spent a good amount of time towards the end of 2019 charting sort of the next steps for Leverage, and I'll let Chris speak about sort of the undergraduate loans and other verticals we might be considering, but we do want to deepen our relationship with the MBA community. So as Chris was alluding to earlier, when you think about financing your MBA, there's the loans portion, but there's also other options. And we've started to build tools to drive transparency in that. So last week we launched the financial aid tracker. And we can include a link for the listeners on the page. It allows anyone to see what financial aid has been offered to various students based on their profile at each school in an anonymous way. So we hope to build more things like this in the coming months. And Chris, maybe you want to talk about sort of expansion opportunities.
Yeah, so over the last 18 months, we have been serving quite a few law students, medical school students, dental students, and about 2 months ago, we expanded to start covering undergraduate campuses as well. And the dynamics of learning how to do this well in different markets are pretty challenging, but it's what makes this exciting. We've really enjoyed, look, MBA, we had the great advantage of having gone through the whole process ourselves and fully understanding how to get in front of people, how to message things to people, and what they care about. We have been humbled in how little we actually know about what that process looks like for people going through other graduate program types. But it's just led to a lot of conversations with people who kind of are currently in those programs to ask them what they think about what we're doing, how we can actually build a playbook for scaling the outreach, for creating new negotiation pools in those segments. And just excited to say now that we are making some pretty considerable traction in a lot of those verticals. And the more we're able to grow all the verticals, the more we're able to actually negotiate lower rates for everybody in the group, whether it's MBA or non-MBA.
Yeah, that's impressive. I guess one question that I meant to kind of get to earlier that I'm curious just to, and I guess maybe Chris, we can stick with you on this one, is, how do you make money? And I mean, is it, I guess, is there a piece of the savings that gets passed on to leverage to fund your operations, or how does that aspect of this work?
It's a great question. So we get paid by a lender when somebody closes a loan, but when you sign up, we don't require you to take a loan and we don't charge you anything to sign up to leverage.
Right.
So think of it as like we're trying to align incentives, and a promise that we do make to people is that we'll only accept a payment and make money if we're able to save you more money through the group than you could not going through the group.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And it, yeah, it seems like it's kind of a no. I mean, if I'm an MBA applicant who's got, an acceptance letter and I've chosen to matriculate somewhere, I don't really know why I wouldn't sign up and get into the pool just because it sounds like, yeah, as you said, you guys can negotiate a great loan, and if you can't, the person's not obligated, they haven't paid anything. So it, yeah, it seems like a no-brainer to me. So you guys alluded to this earlier, Chris especially, but you guys, are both current Harvard Business School students, and having done an MBA myself, I know that's it's a challenging experience on its own, let alone while like running a company. So I'm kind of curious to understand, not only like how do you balance this stuff, but also, how has HBS been in terms of their support for this effort? Because on the one hand, you've got schoolwork and things to take care of, but on the other hand, I know the school has a ton of resources for people who are doing this kind of stuff. So, yeah, Chris, maybe you want to start, and then Nikhil, we can go over to you too. And I'm just curious to hear what you guys have to say about the entrepreneurial environment at HBS and how that's kind of played and how you've managed to juggle all this.
So we've been really happy with the level of support that we've gotten through HBS. And a lot of it is what you make of it. There's a lot of resources, and your willingness to go out there and ask for help correlates pretty well with what you can get out of it. The formal things are free office space at the Harvard Innovation Lab, which we use every day. And more importantly, free coffee, which I'm drinking right now. And then there's some structural programs, like there's something called the Rock Center Summer Fellowship, where you can actually get a couple of $1,000 through the school just for working on an idea or for a startup over the summer, which helps really quite a few people do that who might not have otherwise done that. And then I'd say the most important things that we found are the level of support that we can get from alumni, from professors, and from our classmates. So kind of any time that we've had a question about how we should do something or what we should actually be doing or trying to get in touch with somebody, we've used one of those three resources. It's hard for me to overstate how helpful the professors at this institution actually are and how really involved they can get as long as you're willing to work in involving them in the process. So I'd say, like, just overall, there's a lot that you can take advantage of, and I'm sure that there's a lot of resources at the business schools as well. But if you want to start a company, I can't imagine many better places to do one.
Got it. Nikhil, anything you want to say about kind of juggling business school life and a business and also the support that you guys have gotten in doing this?
Yeah, of course. I think the support is quite incredible. If we think about it, you know, if I just think through the resources we've utilized, there's been multiple pitch competitions we've gone through. We've met dozens of mentors through the community, just like Chris spoke about. Whenever we have a challenge, we look around. For example, maybe it's helpful to make it more tactical for listeners. In the earliest days, simplest thing of registering the company and thinking about, you know, since this is the financial space, the regulations in the space, we wanted to get advice from lawyers. We didn't have the money to do that. We reached out through a program at the Howard Innovation Lab to the Howard Law School. The folks at the law school, students and people supervising students, like graduated lawyers supervising students, came together to help us work on our case specifically. And honestly, I don't know if I can get that quality of work, even if I pay a law firm. The Rock Center, they have incredible resources. Chris spoke about the HBS Summer Fellowship Program. There are other resources just like that throughout your time over here. And yes, honestly, I don't know what more I could ask for from HBS in terms of support. It's a really incredible place. Now, balancing stuff, I think that that's a challenge everyone faces, not just people going to pursue the entrepreneurial path. You know, we don't have to do recruiting, which is great, right? So that frees up our time from compared to people who might be sitting in interviews and preparing for case studies and things like that. So it's a balance, but we make the most of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess, you know, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't take advantage of having two successful entrepreneurs on the podcast to ask you guys about just more general advice you have for MBA applicants who have entrepreneurial goals. Because I feel like, you know, we see our fair share on QueerAdmit.com. We see, you know, a lot of people coming through who indicate that they want to start a business. But I often feel like in my own experience going to business school and just being on you know, B-school campuses from time to time, that a lot of people show up in business school wanting to start a company, but so many of them get kind of swept up in, I don't know if it's just the reality of, like, you know, the financial need or whatever it might be, but they end up kind of going, you know, becoming consultants or bankers or working in a tech company or something and putting that entrepreneurial dream kind of on hold. And so I just wondered if you had any advice for people who are thinking about, you know, doing something entrepreneurial and how they can kind of make it happen, or, you know, any kind of key advice that you would have for this crowd. So maybe Chris, you want to take us through that one? Yeah,
absolutely. So the number one advice I could have is take advantage of the fact that starting a company during your first year of business school and working on it during the summer is a zero risk proposition to you. That if there's a chance that you might want to start a company, but that you might also want to go down a more traditional route or work for a tech company, you can start something your first year, work on it during the summer, and if it doesn't work out, you'll actually be better off when you're recruiting in the fall for a job after you graduate than somebody who didn't try that and didn't do that. And that's actually part of the frame of mind that I went into this with. I was one of those people who came from a rather large company at Netflix in LA, thought I really wanted to start something and was kind of afraid that maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't work out. Using that first year as this no-risk way to just get something off the ground and know that your worst downside is 12 months from now, you'll just be recruiting and you'll still graduate with an MBA from a great institution and a high likelihood of being employed actually makes taking risks as an entrepreneur a lot easier. So just start something as soon as you can and don't worry about the downside because there isn't downside.
Yeah. And I guess there, you know, obviously in the case of like HBS, you got office space, you mentioned free coffee. So it's sort of, you know, there are a lot of resources. And I know, you know, business school students across, you know, in a whole number of schools are really tapping into faculty. And Nikhil, you pointed out, you know, these pitch competitions. It is a really, it's almost like a safe space to try something out. And, you know, I guess the worst thing that could happen in from some you know, perspective would be that you don't do a summer internship like some of your classmates might because you're trying to make your business happen. But I mean, gosh, I know so many people who completely pivoted and shifted gears between kind of a summer internship versus where they landed post MBA anyway. So
yeah.
Good advice. Nikhil, I want to turn to you and maybe Chris after that, if there are thoughts, but I just wondered if you guys had any, you know, final thoughts on student loans and advice for candidates who are about to accept an admissions offer and sort of begin the financing process. I mean, I know Chris had alluded earlier that you have this like 30 days before the tuition is due to kind of make something, to get something started. But do you guys have any advice, you know, specifically around maybe starting earlier than that or whatever it might be? Like, are there certain things you would recommend people do as they get their offers?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing, you know, we alluded to this a couple of times, but look for options outside of loans right away. And you can start doing that right now. A, ask the financial aid office or the admissions office whether they'll be able to help. After that, look for external scholarships. Lots of times financial aid offices will have a list of external scholarships. Chris, I think we built out a resource the other day. We can provide a link to that as well, so you can get a head start on all the external scholarships that are available for MBA students. And after that, yeah, turn to loans.
And would you say starting, like, I guess, does someone need to have an acceptance in hand in order to sign up at Leverage?
Nope.
No. Okay.
So we've actually got people signing up right now who are hopeful admits for the class of 2024. So really, like, we won't email you a ton until it actually makes sense for you to get more updates about what we're doing for your class.
Okay.
But the more people who, there's no downside to signing up as early as you possibly can.
Okay, that makes sense. And Chris, while you're sort of chatting with me here, do you have any other kind of thoughts or last bits of advice for people as they kind of embark on this process?
Yeah, if you are applying to business school right now and you have any doubts about it, don't. It is like, this is, let's throw the loans and the financing aside. You hear people say that it's an incredible experience. I wish I could do it 3 or 4 more times. So just enjoy it. Read Clear Admit. There's a bunch of awesome stuff on there. I actually met a bunch of friends on Clear Admit forums who I'm actually friends with right now in class. So also take advantage of that when you're able to. And sign up for Leverage after you get in.
Yeah. Okay. Great advice. I'm thrilled to hear that. I didn't know that you know some of the HBS classmates actually were kind of communicating on clearadmit.com. That's great to hear too. So yeah, just such a cool story, guys. I really appreciate. I mean, I think, you know, people tuning into this podcast, obviously, it's always great to hear any kind of founder stories and to hear from current MBA students at an institution like Harvard Business School. But also, you know, this is kind of, as I said earlier, it's kind of a no-brainer to just sign up for Leverage and you know, get the best kind of rate you can on a student loan. I mean, that just is, you know, makes good business sense. So thanks to you both for making time today to chat. Really appreciate having you both on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, so everyone stay tuned. More episodes to come. Our weekly episodes of Wiretaps and other things are on tap in terms of, you know, admissions director Q&As. So thanks again for listening, everyone, and we'll see you real soon.